I'm Leonard Lopate, and this is WNYC at AM 820 and 93.9 FM. We're also online at WNYC.org. Searching for Intruders is a series of short and interconnected stories by Stephen Raleigh Byler about an empathetic young man's attempts to make sense of his world. He seems to be on something like a quest to eliminate pain felt by the people in his life, and even the animals that he encounters. Mr. Byler's stories are both hilarious and searing and remind their readers of their own struggles to reconcile past actions with present realities. The book is published by William Morrow, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Stephen Raleigh Byler to our show today. Hello.
How are you?
Now, these are interconnected stories, and many people are calling it a novel, and I don't want to get into all of that anymore. I'm sure you're bored by that by now. But I am curious about how you wrote them. Did you write them in sequence, or did you feel you had to fill in things when you realized that you had a number of stories that would interconnect well?
Well, I wrote the vignettes separately alongside. I thought it was a different project. I was experimenting trying to write
The vignettes fill in the storyline in between the stories.
Yeah, they're memory flashes. They function like, essentially, they're the unconscious of the narrator. Almost in a kind of memory recovery fashion, they're assaulting his efforts at intimacy in the present.
But sometimes these vignettes are just 10 lines long. So.
Yeah, they're very short. And I did it as an exercise, really. I wanted to experiment with writing short shorts. And I was just trying to work at controlling my language and my prose. And I thought if I can write 6 or 7 good lines, then I can it's going to help me write the book. And I realized as I did those, I had about 6 of those done. And as I wrote the stories alongside of it, I realized that it was this an evolving, the same project, and that these were the memories of this Wilson Hughes. There was clearly there were things bubbling beneath the surface for him. And these violent memories were what they were, what the intruders finally were.
So you wrote these stories all with one protagonist, but you wrote them as separate stories, and then somewhere along the line you started realizing that you had something that connected them all. And then did that mean that you had to write stories that filled in spaces? Or did you just keep on trusting yourself to come up with stories about this man?
Well, they were all I had found a narrator, mm-hmm. and they were all stories told by the same narrator. And I'd say I was about halfway through it. I was about 5 or 6 stories into it when I really committed to it. And I said, okay, this is a novel in stories. And I was interested. It became at that point a kind of a literary experiment without going. Yeah, I know you said you didn't want to go that way, but I
just think that you probably are bored explaining it.
Yeah.
I try to spare you it, but there's no way to talk about this without dealing with it to some degree.
Yeah, it is a novel in the end, and I wrote it to be a novel in stories. I mean, I like the idea of someone being able to pick it up and read parts of it and have it all work together in the end, and have the stories work on their own, and even have the vignettes work like short shorts.
But short stories are usually meant to be it's a specific form, usually
right.
A concentrated form. Novels can be a lot more expansive, more digressive. And so you're playing with the tension between the two, but you wind up telling us the kind of story that we'd get from a novel. Here we have Wilson Hughes in his college years, all the way to his early 30s, I guess, because yeah. You're not exact about that. We watch him meet his college girlfriend, marry her, get divorced, meet another woman who dies. But one of the things that remains constant here is his attempt to rescue people and animals from pain. When did you realize that that was what Wilson Hughes was also about?
Well, I think I discovered it as he discovered it, as those memories, as those vignettes were coming out. And there was a wound present. There were wounds present, obviously, from his childhood. And some of these dysfunctionally masculine memories that were really intruding on his efforts at intimacy, largely with women, and sort of informing the degree to which he was kind of drifting.
In one of the stories, Helper, he stops his car when he sees this boyfriend hitting his girlfriend and screams at the boyfriend, "Beat me instead."
Yeah.
It actually, it's both dramatic and very funny at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, in that case, he certainly was not completely self-aware about his reaction. I mean, it was, he saw someone get hit alongside the road, and suddenly he's slamming the brakes on and in a fight with some guy that's much bigger than he is. Mm-hmm. And then he's suddenly saying, well, what am I doing here? I'm backing down. But that's his self-awareness is evolving. You know, he's discovering how these memories are affecting him. And sometimes it's you know, done with an effort at with some comic relief, no doubt.
Well, there's a lot of funny stuff in this book, even though there's violence and other things. Is that just a natural tendency on your part to find yourself in a scene that could be rather shocking and allowing it to become funny at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, it has. It certainly one writes in the directions of those kinds of scenes because they have a certain tension and you know, I mean, you have to find things to laugh at in the midst of of pain.
In the story Perrito, he wants to save an abandoned puppy in Chile. And another, he stops a coyote from hunting a rabbit. This seems like an almost futile effort on his part. And as you said, he tried to stop that guy from hitting his girlfriend and discovered that he was not the man to do it. He was a little too small for that.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely in the throes. And he's trying to reinvent himself as a man, you might say. These memories that appear between the chapters are certainly, they're certainly dysfunctionally masculine. And I very much had Hemingway's collection in our time, his first collection, in mind when I wrote this. And you can even see some of the structural similarities, of course, in that.
And all the Spanish, of course.
And the Spanish, yeah. I mean, and I tried to, you know, really self-consciously move beyond some of what you might call a masculine sentimentality that appears even in some of the post-Hemingway kind of muscle prose.
In fact, you seem to undermine it in Perrito. A Chilean acquaintance says to Wilson, a man must manage his affections. You must learn to be a man. You must learn the mercy of ruthlessness. And Wilson's response is, bueno, then I will never be a man.
Yeah. I felt I had to do that. I mean, I it's been a great fear of mine that I'd be sort of pushed into the old boys club, because I'm writing in, you know, and I worked at a fly fishing lodge in the Bahamas, and I lived in Ketchum, Idaho, and so there's some of these things that come up quintessentially, and the style of my prose. And then there have been, in the New York Times Review said mentioned, well, Ford and Carver, but I really. In that second half, and particularly in that last story, was very self-consciously trying to say, hey, you know, I'm trying to do my own thing.
Well, what I just quoted is the last line of the last story in the book. And I guess it's a moment of epiphany for Wilson. You end up the book with an epiphany, either which could lead to another book or sort of explains what the world is going to be like for him, for us, for the rest of his life. Maybe you don't have to ever write about Wilson again.
No, I think I'll, in the future. It's not the next book. It's not the book I'm currently working on, but he'll reappear.
Could you read a bit from it for us?
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that.
Stephen Raleigh Byerler's book is Searching for Intruders, and it's published by William Morrow. Which story are you going to read from?
I'm going to read from the first story, and it's called Roaches. Wilson and his then-wife Mel are living in a New York City apartment, and they're not New Yorkers. They, you know, the first paragraph of the story says, that fall the roaches took over our home, and it ends, we didn't know anything about New York or about roaches. So they're from a small town, Pennsylvania, and, you know, as any New Yorker probably knows, or anybody who's lived in New York sometimes, these things can take over, roaches, that is. And of course, it starts to drive a wedge between them. She thinks he should take care of it.
Because he's a man.
Because he's a man, of course. So I'm going to read an excerpt from Roaches, and the problem has started to creep in, as it were.
or scutter.
I don't know how long it takes for roach eggs to hatch, but that must have been what happened. I thought about having someone in, some kind of an exterminator, but I didn't like the idea of chemicals in our home. It seemed like we should be able to handle the problem ourselves. I guess I was thinking that Mel was generally right about keeping things sealed and clean, that over time the problem would go away if we kept food away from them. It was the one night a week that we treated ourselves to an evening out. It was Sunday evening, so the city was mellower, more to our taste. We rode the number 9 train down to a cute little bistro in the quaint part of West Village with all the quiet, narrow streets. We liked that area because it seemed much cleaner and more romantic than the neighborhood where we lived, which had high buildings, dirty sidewalks, wide streets, and heavy traffic. We had a fine evening, and we got a little tipsy on a bottle of cheap red wine. After the meal, we got dessert crepes from a little stand we knew about and carried them with us on the subway. We were going to feed them to each other in bed. Maybe they'd been coming out after midnight while we were sleeping and we just didn't know it, but I think the eggs must have been gestating, and somehow they all hatched at the same time. At 2 a.m., when we got in with our crepes, it looked like the kitchen floor was alive. They were all over the place. We'd had some cheese and crackers and a glass of our own cheap red wine before we'd gone out, and we hadn't put any of it away. They were devouring the cheese and crackers, and there was even one crawling up the stem of a wine glass. Mostly they were in the kitchen, but a few of the bigger, more obnoxious ones had wandered into the living room. One of them, quite a large one, had flipped over on its back and was trying to get itself turned over again. It was writhing and kicking all of its little legs in the air, desperately. "Oh, Jesus, we'll kill it," Mel said, incensed. Mel had hustled past the kitchen and taken a seat in one of our ice cream parlor chairs along the wall of our tiny living room. I had stomped on a few in the kitchen maniacally, and now I stood staring at this roach on its back with my wife staring at me. She plopped our crepes on our desk, and some of the slices of banana with Nutella fell out on it. She propped her elbows on her knees and put her face in her hands. "Do something, would you?" she said, almost shouting. I stomped out a moderate-sized roach that was making a run for the kitchen, and then I honed in on the one on its back.
Stephen Raleigh Byler reading from the first story, Roaches, in his book Searching for Intruders, a series of interconnected stories that make up a novel. And Mel, his wife, is a beauty queen, not the sort of person you'd immediately, or former beauty queen anyway, sort of person you'd immediately think of as the kind of woman a guy who wants to save everybody from himself would be attracted to. But she is troubled partly because she can't handle the way people deal with her and her beauty. Later, he winds up with a woman who is seriously ill. This is a man who needs to help people mm-hmm. to a point of almost sickness, and when they become healthy, he'd be not interested in them anymore.
Yeah, maybe, or they not in him. He's not completely sure.
You said that you'd worked at a lot of odd jobs over the years, and Wilson Hughes, your character, grew up in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, like you did. Is it necessary to experience some of these things to be able to write about them?
Well, I think it helps. I think to understand emotionally the emotional weight of certain kinds of suffering, I think, is certain kinds of pain, it helps to write about those things. In terms of inventing funny dialogue, that can come from anywhere, but getting understanding the emotional weight of different, be they death, be they divorce, these kinds of things. But of course, you invent.
But you don't sound to be discouraging people from seeing autobiographical connections, as some writers try.
No, I don't. I mean, I think it's a big joke, frankly. I mean, it's every novelist writes from their life, and they always have, and all you have to do is pick up a biography, and you can piece it together very easily. At the same time, you invent, it is fiction. You invent... I mean, for instance, I lived in a New York apartment. with a girlfriend, and it had roaches, but we never they never invaded our bedroom and walked in on us during sex, which happens in this. So, you know, I mean, you invent you tend to invent the dialogue as much as anything, and all of that. Yeah.
It could have happened, by the way. Searching for Intruders is Stephen Raleigh Byler's first book. It's from William Morrow. Obviously, it's not going to be your last. You said you're working on a novel now?
Yeah, I'm working on a novel set in Cuba. I think it's going to be pretty different than this, no doubt. Different narrator, different sound.
But you must be thrilled by the kind of response this book has gotten. The reviews have been fabulous.
Yeah, I'm very happy. I'm very happy. And, I mean, I just need to keep working now.
Thank you so much for being with us today. Well, that does it for today's show. I hope you've enjoyed it. Melissa Egan is our executive producer, Barrett Brontes and Jessica Westerman, the assistant producers, and we had help today from Bruce Doniff, Maureen McMahon.